Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Dr. Jeff Janesco, curator of the Milken Archive of Jewish Music. We'll also have visits from our Two Jewish Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Shinshinim Bar El Kachar, and Leah Avuno, and our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. This is the weekend prior to that great American commemoration, the 4th of July, Independence Day, the day of fireworks, baseball, barbecues, and the celebration of freedom. As Jews, we've been uniquely blessed to experience true religious freedom in the United States, and while we have contributed greatly to this country, we have received greatly as well. To play us in on this summer morning on Two Jewish on the theme of Independence Day, here's Mandy Patinkin's Yiddish version of the Irving Berlin classic, God Bless America. Here it's Gott Bench America, but blended with that most American of all songs and sports, also written by a Jewish guy, Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Koyf mir den Nislach und Cracker Jack, will ich kein Mulf und dort nicht weg. Jetzt seh gut, mut die Ballspieler, es passt nicht, als man verspielt. Weil sie sehen, zwei, drei Steigs neus bei der Baseballspiel.
Bench America, Land, wo sich lieb, Stege bei ihr, Madrich sei ihr, überall echt das Strahl und zu lieb. Von die Berge zu die Prairies, bis die Armin weiß mit Schau.
So now we are fully ready for the 4th, thanks to Mandy Patinkin. You know, this is a good weekend to reflect on the idea of Jewish identity in America. While for many generations we struggled with just how complete our acceptance was in American society, nowadays Jews have run for president, won primaries, been vice president on major party tickets, been cabinet officers and Supreme Court justices, been, well, presidential son-in-laws, become a big part of the Senate and the House, had all kinds of films made about us. We've been accepted to country clubs and nearly all social organizations. We've owned and played on World Series and Super Bowl and NBA and NHL championship-winning teams. We've been widely accepted within American society to a degree that seems to imply, at least most of the time, full acceptance by almost all of America. The issues we face now as Jews are much more focused on whether we'll choose to practice Judaism in meaningful, resilient, enduring ways now that we are fully American. In a way, our acceptance itself has at times been a bit disillusioning. You know what happens when you get what you ask for and the results aren't quite what you expect? We are finding out. We Jews are now about as American as baseball and apple pie. Turns out that means we often become about as Jewish as baseball and apple pie, too.
For we come on the ship they call the Mayflower. We come on the ship that sails the moon. We come in the ages most uncertain hours and sing an American tune. Oh, and it's all right. It's all right, it's all right. You can't be forever blessed.
It all reminds me of a Paul Simon song from my teens, his lovely and slightly sad American tune about all American immigrants' embrace of liberty, the disappointments and pragmatism of making it through each day. To highlight the bluesy quality of Simon's original song, Mandy Patinkin recorded it in Yiddish on his Mamaloshin album. I think it's a perfect continuation of this Two Jewish Show in honor of the 4th of July. To be American, Jewish, hopeful, and a little sad. Sort of the perfect combination, really.
Nornir is gut, gut azoi, ich bin heiß kem uchit no. Vesh rich zichob resol lustig, freidig sein, azoi in gol is go. Azoi. In Golis Seinen meine Bakante alle zernehmen ist. Ich hab kein Fein, was geht im Wein. Weiß mir auch allem, was ist nicht und siehst. Von Keulisch geworden Nor gut is es, gut azoi, azoi lang heigle. Nu ich will von unser Weg von a kleinem Feig, wo seinen mir verfolgen. Sei moecha, wo seinen mir verfolgen. Der Malach am Ovid nimmt meine Schöne putzen euch heroi sie guckt auf in die Leut schmeckt bei euch heu und ich flieh wie am Malach und unten sehen bei Deugen sind heif Die Statue of Liberty, wo sie Gold weit von ihr, und ich flieh wie ein Malach. Zu helles Heilen führt uns der größer Schiff, euch alle Wonne schief mir ringen. Der Schaff und Geurel ist mit uns schön da, Alid von Amerika mir singen, nur gut ist es, gut als euch, euch abbrochen hat alles. Der Heintekehr Schabbis wird morgen euch weg, sich obruhen ist mein Zweck. Azoi sich opuen is mein Zweck.
That was Mandy Patinkin singing Paul Simon's American tune. The paradoxical nature of American identity that this song highlights is particularly appropriate for Jews, considering that when Simon wrote it, the President of the United States, Richard Nixon, felt free to be brutally anti-Semitic in his private comments, while publicly having the very Jewish Henry Kissinger run his foreign policy, and that Nixon and Kissinger basically saved Israel during the Yom Kippur War that year by arranging an emergency airlift of supplies. That was 1973. Thank God we live now in different times, when Israel is a much stronger and more secure nation, when Jews have achieved a level of prominence and acceptance in society that is unprecedented, without all the anti-Semitic messages being attached to our accomplishments. We certainly still worry about the rising tide of Muslim anti-Semitism in America, and especially so in Europe, and of the American college campus mentality that anything bad can be said about Jews since we support Israel. We worry about the continued elements in society that insist on branding Jews as other, those on both the right and the left who seem to still have antipathy towards us just because we're Jews. But we also know that as we approach this, 241st anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, we are living in what is very likely the best place there has ever been for Jews in the world, with the sole exception of Israel. We have so much to be grateful for. Our guest this morning, Dr. Jeff Genesco, is the curator of the extraordinary Milken Archive of Jewish Music, one of the greatest collections of recorded Jewish music and oral histories ever assembled. Find out what it's all about when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term, inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
To play in our guest this morning, here's a recording from the Milken Archive of Jewish Music by Moroccan Jewish cantor Aaron Ben Susan. His Lecha Dodi.
Lecha Dodi, Likrat Kalam. Shabbat Nekamela Lecha Dodi Likrat Kala Bene Shabbat Nekamela Lecha Dodi Likrat Kala Bene Shabbat Nekamela Lecha Dodi Likrat Kala Bene Shabbat Nekamela Shabbat lechuven elcha ki hime kor haberacha merosh mikedem nesucha maase b'machshava tehila lecha dodi likrat kala bene shabbat nekavela lecha dodi likrat
kala. We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning, Dr. Jeff Genesco, who is the curator of the Milken Archive of Jewish Music, that remarkable repository of, well, you could say the musical culture of our entire people. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning to you. Thanks for having me.
So when the Milken Archive started, it was really kind of dramatic in the Jewish musical scene, the best quality recordings, trying to assemble the best performers, if they weren't actual historical recordings, put into really fine form. It came out on CDs. What has changed in the years that the archive has been working?
Well, I don't know that a whole lot has changed. There's always been a real emphasis on high quality. I think probably the biggest change is that, you know, we're not doing CDs anymore, as most people are
right.
doing CDs, and I think so.
What's the matter? You shifted back to 8-track tapes now? What's the?
So yeah, we're gonna do a cassette tape and maybe some vinyl.
How about a little some LPs? Yeah, it's good. Maybe yeah. can some 38s even while you're at it.
Yeah. So I think that's been probably one of the most dramatic changes that has occurred since the archive was founded in 1990. In fact, I was actually hired in part because the leadership at the archive had made the decision to stop producing CDs and to grow the web presence, and they wanted somebody who could kind of help out with that.
In creating the archive, a number of really extraordinary choices were made. How is that? Is that process still ongoing, or is it now more about distribution?
It's really now about, you know, distribution and, you know, kind of growing the audience and raising awareness as much as possible. The repertoire was initially determined by an editorial board that included some composers, cantors, scholars, broadcasters. They really worked together to determine, you know, what they thought was worth documenting and to also help determine the way it would be programmed. That board has not met for probably about 10 years, I would say. So a lot of the music that we have been releasing over the past several years was recorded, 15 years ago.
You know, they did a lot of work along the way. 600 recorded musical works, more than 200 composers, oral histories, just a tremendous amount of material, correct?
Correct. Over 150 people we've documented in oral histories. You're right, there are more than 600 pieces of music. And I should point out, over 500 of those are world premiere recordings. So there was a real emphasis on trying to record things that had not been recorded and that, you know, and that they felt were really kind of in danger of disappearing.
You know, it reminds me of archaeologists who dig and dig and dig, and then somebody else has to end up doing all the documenting. We will talk much more about the extraordinary Milken Archive of Jewish Music, how it's accessed today, what it consists of, with curator Jeff Janeska. We return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people.
If you have a question, comment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, twojewishradio.com, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcast top 10 in America, according to Moment magazine. We welcome our Mivi Na'an, Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
And it's summertime. It's hot. It's when people go on vacation. It's when kids go to camps. There's something Israeli called Mechina. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Yes. I think in two summers, I will know how the summer looks for those who graduate. Mm-hmm. For my daughter. But in Israel, when you graduate, you know, from Yudbet, from high school, usually you prepare yourself, you know, for a few weeks or a few months, and you go to the army. In the recent, I would say, two decades, there is a phenomena that flourish in Israel, and it's called preparatory program. So it's a combination of a gap year, if I'll talk the end.
Yeah, gap year is a new concept in America too. We didn't call it that when I was younger, but you know, people were just taking a year off. Now it's like a gap year.
So it's really taking a year off, preparing, you know, ourselves, they're, you know, preparing them to the army, which is, you know, a new concept.
Yeah,
usually you don't prepare yourself to an army, but what's unique, it's you don't just prepare yourself from a physical training. No,
but
it's like their goal is to prepare, you know, a future soldier from a mental, spiritual, you know, so they will be, you know, very moral, very prepared on, you know, physical level, that's for sure, but also be a better soldier when you know where you're coming from, why you're doing what you're doing, and you're not just a teenager who just, you know, graduates from high school and then you have a gun, for right. God's sake. Right. But also, it's also thinking like how you will be a better citizen after you will finish your army. So when you're going to the army and you have a meaningful service, so you feel you fulfill yourself, you feel like you know that what is your strength and you can use them in the army, for sure you will be much more committed to your country. For sure you will do better things with your with yourself. You will find your strength and you will use them in your civilian life.
Yeah,
so you will be a better, you know how to make decision what college to go after, you know, that's the, and I want to give you some examples from last year, like for instance from the 2016 president award that were given to soldiers on Yom HaTzmaut last year
in Israel, right?
11 of them, 11 of them were graduates from Mechina. And also important to say that officers, you know, the rate of soldiers who decide to go to
officer training school,
officer, right. Like usually 30%. Like when you check the those who graduate from Mechina, it's 50%.
So it's an organized program. And maybe we'll talk about some of the specifics of
yes,
that next
week.
Yes,
we'll talk more specifics.
Very interesting change. Thanks, Ashrat. We'll talk
Toda
next
rabbi.
Week. We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Boker Tov, good morning.
Good morning and happy almost 4th of July.
Yeah.
We were talking the last couple of weeks about the value of a Jewish day school education, but right. also as it related to bringing kids to Israel and that sort of integrated approach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was thinking about the difference between coming to Jerusalem, having heard vaguely about Jerusalem, and then, oh, you see this golden city with the old walls and there's a gold dome over there,
yeah,
as opposed to having seen pictures of it your whole life, heard about it, learned Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, mm-hmm. knowing some of the history, but then seeing the reality feels really different from what you might have imagined.
Sure. And you know, everybody has their own perspective and experience in life, and so you bring that with you on this kind of a trip. Having the backdrop in education, we talk a lot about prior knowledge. It's a huge launch pad and starting point for learning new things and solidifying skills and things that you already knew. But coming with this great background has different effects on kids. For some, it's a little bit anticlimactic. It's like, oh, okay, that's the wall. Am I supposed to feel something? And right. for others, it's like instant tears and overwhelmed joy. So each person brings their own experience and kind of sees the visit to Israel through that lens. But being there and seeing the reality of what it's really like is important, because it takes this abstract, you know, they're way over there. Here's, you know, we see Israelis in our community and we work with them. So we get very close, but to be there and to see the reality and experience the reality as much as you can as a tourist on a trip, is a very different kind of a thing.
You know, for kids, part of creating an integrated Jewish experience
mm-hmm.
is, well, it's so difficult to achieve that in a supplementary school environment. We work really hard to do that
yeah.
in the 5 hours a week when we have kids, if they show up for the whole time each
right,
time.
Right.
In a day school, you have much more opportunity to do that.
Sure.
How do you avoid overdoing it?
Well, you know, there's a developmental approach, and you try to carefully craft a curriculum that isn't too redundant. Of course, there's the cycle of the year, and we all get used to that. And for Sukkot, you do X, Y, and Z, and it means the following things. But each year is a little bit different, and each year it gets a little bit deeper, to the point where by the time our kids are in eighth grade, they actually do a lot of teaching to the younger grades about the things that they're learning. So going out and you know, walking through Israel and experiencing praying on Masada, being in the Dead Sea, takes it to such a different place. So it's the ultimate like refreshing of the curriculum. But we, you know, you try to be careful and keep it fresh with different people, different opportunities, different kinds of experiences, and developmentally different strategies and approaches over the course of time.
Thanks, John. We will talk next week.
Okay, have a great week.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Rabbi Shlomo is leading Torah study at his shul. All of a sudden, an angel appears. The angel says, Rabbi Shlomo, you're an example to all your fellow human beings. You are totally unselfish. Your behavior is faultless. Your Jewish learning extensive. Your tzedakah, your charity exemplary. In return for being such a mensch, the angel continues, I'm going to offer you a choice of reward. You can either have infinite wealth, infinite health, or infinite wisdom. Which will it be, Rabbi Shlomo? Whatever you choose will be immediately granted. Without hesitation, Rabbi Shlomo replies, I'd love to have infinite wisdom. Mazel tov, Rabbi Shlomo says, the angel, it's done. Enjoy. The angel disappears. For a few moments, there's stunned silence in the Torah study group. Nobody can believe what's happened. But they're Jews, so soon one of the group breaks the silence. Rabbi Shlomo, he asks, why don't you test out your newfound wisdom? Say something really wise to us, Rabbi. So Rabbi Shlomo answers, I should have taken the money. That was the old Jewish joke of the week. A special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and, well, maybe take the money. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Balak in the Book of Numbers, which includes some of the best words an outsider ever delivered about our people. In the portion, one of just two in the whole Torah named after a non-Jew, 40 years of wandering have passed, the Israelites have finally arrived on the borders of the land of Canaan. They are about to move in. They seem unstoppable to their opponents. Balak, king of Moab, comes up with a novel plan. He will hire Balaam, a pagan sorcerer, to curse the Israelites, which will destroy their chances of defeating his own army and entering the land. Only the scheme doesn't work. Balaam may be a polytheistic prophet, but he is also an honest man who conveys only what God permits him to say. After consulting the Almighty, Balaam agrees to do the deed, but only if God permits him to do so. And so we are given the intriguing spectacle of Balaam, the sorcerer, three times trying to curse the people of Israel, only to find that the words that come out of his mouth are not curses, but blessings. The last of these orations is a text that's become the prayer we use whenever we enter a synagogue. Ma tovu ohalecha Yaakov, how good are your tents, Jacob, your homes, Israel.
Thank you.
somehow the best laid plans of Israel's enemies go awry, transformed by the hand of God. Without being deterministic, we know that in recent decades, many nations and organizations have planned the destruction of our people and of our country, of Israel. Although their efforts have injured us, we ultimately have triumphed and flourished. Perhaps more importantly, the personal message of this portion, Balak, is a subtle one. Usually the way it works in life is that we intend to bring to fruition through our own actions and schemes, plans for our own advantage, and yet we bring tsoras, trouble instead. But if instead we rely on God's help and inspiration, we'll find that even our less than nobly motivated actions can bring blessing in place of curses. That is, it's all a matter of remembering the true source of inspiration and creativity, and therefore of blessing, which is God. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Dr. Jeff Janesco, the curator of the Milken Archive of Jewish Music, will explore this extraordinary resource with us, find out how it works and how you can get at it when we return here on To Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Sandy Seltzer.
According to a new report issued by the Anti-Defamation League, there are now an estimated 42 branches of the Ku Klux Klan in 33 states, with over 3,000 members, more than half of which have been established within the past 3 years. Most are found not only in the southern United States, but surprisingly on the eastern seaboard as well. Rallies under their auspices and literature that is distributed focuses not only upon hatred of Jews, but homophobia and Islamophobia as well. Two former officials, who filled a special State Department office to monitor and combat anti-Semitism around the world, have called the decision of the Trump administration, effective July the 1, to close the office tragic and terrible. The two, Hannah Rosenthal and Ira Forman, who served during the Obama presidency, asserted that the decision would result in situations in which neither Congress, the State Department, nor American embassies would either understand or recognize the dangers posed by anti-Semitism until people were actually rounded up and sent to their deaths. The Reform and Conservative movements in this country and in Israel, as well as a minority of Orthodox groups, along with Israel's Jewish Agency and key members of the Israeli Knesset, have all condemned the decision of the Israeli cabinet and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to shelve the plan for a pluralistic worship area at the Western Wall in Jerusalem because of ultra-Orthodox opposition. Calling it a cynical, wicked decision, a leading spokesman of the conservative movement added, "The Israeli cabinet took this historic agreement and then threw it in the faces of millions of Jews around the world." The head of the Jewish Agency said, "Freezing pluralistic prayer endangers the unity of the Jewish people," while the chair and president of Artsakh, the Association of Reform Jewish Zionists, declared, "It is a sad irony that in the 21st century, Israel remains one of the few places where Jews cannot express their religious freedom." And on a lighter note, Wonder Woman, starring the Israeli actress, the former Miss Israel Gal Gadot, promises to be the highest-earning action motion picture film of all time directed by a woman. And for those of you who are racing fans, NASCAR has its first Jewish competitor, Alone Day, who raced in the Monster Energy Nasser Cup Series in Southern California last week, where he finished in 32nd place. Day, who is 25 and lives in Tel Aviv and wears the Star of David on his racing suit, was named Athlete of the Year in 2016 by Israel's Sports and Culture Ministry. He learned about NASCAR, he says, by playing video games. And that's the Two Jewish News.
To welcome back our guest this morning from the Milk and Archive of Jewish Music, here's a sample of the collection, Chazon Yosla Rosenblatt's classic, Uvenucha Yomar. We welcome back to Two Jewish, curator Jeff Janesco. He's in charge of the Milken Archive, which is an extraordinary treasure of Jewish music assembled over the course of the period. I think it began to be released in early 2000s, maybe 2003 or so.
2003, exactly.
And I remember getting the CDs and thinking, boy, you know, I collected Jewish music CDs. I still have them. I haven't moved them all into digital form yet. But I remember thinking, boy, these are so well made and very broad in scope. That quality, that attention to quality certainly helps when you are accessing them. What have you had to do to try to get the word out, to make it accessible? What's the best way for people to access the Milken Archive?
We've really put a lot of effort into the website. In fact, we just redesigned and relaunched a new website last year. It took us about 2 years to complete the process. We've really tried to put that together in a way where you can really access all of the related material. There was a really big emphasis on research in the Milken Archive, and we were acknowledged many times over for the incredible depth of the liner notes and the composer biographies. So we've tried to put that together in a way that's really easy to kind of navigate and find the things that are related to the particular pieces of music you're interested in. We also, you alluded earlier to the oral history collection, and we're able to kind of put those types of non-musical material that really help illuminate the music's historical and cultural context. We're able to put those items together in a way that I think just flows easily and kind of makes sense.
There are collections on the website, for example, of Yiddish theater music that I think would certainly be lost soon if they didn't exist in this format. How is there any opportunity to spread them beyond the website? Do you have other ways of connecting people to this material?
Yeah, well, you know, we were talking earlier about the shift from CDs to MP3s and now into streaming services.
Right.
And that's an area where you know, you can access almost everything that we have recorded on, I mean, Spotify is probably the most prominent of the streaming services, but we are on, you know, iTunes and Apple Music, YouTube, other services like that. And I mean, the great thing, if you're not trying to turn a profit, you can access a lot of that stuff for free. And, you know, we're in the unique position of being a nonprofit. We're not relying on sales to keep the lights on. So, you know, we're happy to have our music out there in as many formats as possible and really try to kind of connect with people where they are.
The website, by the way, is really beautiful now and pretty quickly accessible. Yeah, my compliments. In which you can hear pretty much anything. You know, you can catch stuff from all around the world. You can listen to psalms. You can hear classical composers who set their talents to Jewish music. It's a really accessible and useful website. Obviously, a lot of energy and effort and money went into doing that. In creating that kind of a program, how do you make the choices that you make?
Well, I guess it's the person who was in charge of that. I was really guided by the vision of the editorial board. And, you know, the board decided that, you know, research was going to be important and that we were going to have really high academic standards, and I wanted that to shine through. They also, you know, determined that the repertoire was going to be presented in a particular way. So they established certain themes that we were going to use in order to kind of program the music. So I really tried to just use that, you know, their vision as the basis for the structure of the website and put the website together in a way that the individual pieces of music really flowed together in the order that they were intended to be experienced in. And then beyond that, I said, you know, what you want to avoid is sort of locking people into, you know, only one kind of experience. So we try to provide, you know, lots of different ways to experience music as well, or to, you know, if you're interested in a particular person or a particular item, to easily access all of the other types of material that we have available there.
One of the fabulous things as a cantor myself is seeing the names of so many spectacular cantors from the period when they did these recordings, and really great musicians. I mean, they didn't fool around. They really tried to find the very best people to do what they were doing. So does it stand the danger of becoming kind of locked into a particular period, as good as it is? Music always changes.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I think, I mean, anytime you're documenting anything like that, there's no way to avoid that unless you continue to record or continue to present. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be through an audio recording. It could be through live performances or something like that.
Sure.
I guess that's the newest phase of the Melkin Archive that we have just entered into, and I don't know if you've heard about this at all. We just established a fund at UCLA with the School of Music there. And, you know, about 5 years ago, UCLA established the Mickey Katz Chair in Jewish Music.
And he has indeed been on Too Jewish already, so that's great. That's a good connection.
Oh, you've spoken with Mark Wigman already?
I have indeed, yeah.
Okay, excellent. So, Mark's a great guy.
He is.
We will be working with him, with the School of Music, and, you know, with other entities at UCLA, like the Center for Jewish Studies, to try to build programs in research and in performance and in community engagement. So the work of kind of documenting, recording. There was a big flurry of work kind of in the 1990s and early 2000s, and then a lot of effort that went into releasing the recordings, you know, so now it seems we might be shifting gears a little bit.
So, and this is a dangerous question to ask a curator, but what's your favorite kind of Jewish music?
Oh, that is a it's a difficult question. I try to be kind of, you know, as neutral as possible when it comes to being a curator, and really, I really try to focus on the stories behind the music.
But you must have preferences.
I think, you know, when I was a doctoral student at UCLA, my research was focused on the avant-garde Jewish music scene in New York and artists who had recorded for John Zorn's Radical Jewish Culture series. So if I just sort of putting something on for my own pleasure, I am, you know, I'm kind of drawn to a lot of that music. It's just that, you know, artistically kind of appealing to me. But I think you can find interest in almost anything, and, you know, like lots of good music. Sometimes you don't know how interested or how interesting the music is the first time you listen to it. So I think, you know, most of it really, really stands up to repeated listening. I really love a lot of the cantorial music too. I mean, and that, you know, I think that's something that kind of takes a few listens to get into. But,
I think that's right. I mean, the accessibility and quality are not always the same thing in music. There's been a sort of explosion in, partly from YouTube and all kinds of mashups and various different kinds of pop versions of Jewish music, which is now very accessible. There's a lot of Israeli music coming over. Some of it's high quality, some of it's just fun. Is there the possibility that the Milken Archive will look at more contemporary, or will continue to develop in that direction?
I think there's a possibility there. I think especially within the context of the partnership with UCLA, I think there's a lot more opportunities to kind of expand into some of those areas and really to really look at what is happening now. I think we've done a lot of work in terms of rescuing the past. I'm sure there's more stuff out there that could be rescued.
Sure.
But I think that music needs to be put in conversation a little bit with what is happening now.
So a weird question. Were there any composers or artists who just didn't want to work with the Milken Archive initially, or who resisted having their music recorded?
You know, there was one, and I won't name names.
Okay.
A composer whose recording we actually licensed, and you know, through a record label that he had recorded for, and he was not involved in, you know, directly in the licensing of it, but he was very upset to find out that we had actually licensed this piece of music. You know, first accused us of
stealing it, of course.
Of basically stealing it,
right?
You know, and then when we showed him the documentation that we had actually gone through all of the right steps in order to license it, he, you know, that didn't really make any difference. He just didn't really want to be included.
It's just
I don't know if it was an objection just because he wasn't aware of the license, or if he had some larger issue with what we were doing.
You know, not that musicians can ever be temperamental or, you know, cantors,
right,
of course. Only speaking from personal experience here, I you know, can't imagine such a thing taking place. But is there anything that you wish had been recorded in the period when all the active recording was going on? I mean, there's so much here, but is there anything you wish that had been included that wasn't?
I can't think of anything, you know, that I wished had been included. I guess I will say, you know, we did actually put quite a bit of effort into recording Herb Vile's The Eternal Road.
Yeah.
We only released a portion of that, and we recorded much more than we released. But I would like to see the rest of that recording see the light of day at some point. I think that would be a priority. You know, beyond that, I would really actually like to see us delve into the realm of historical and archival recordings a little bit, you know, so that we could look at the, you know, we made these wonderful Yiddish theater recordings that have these, you know, fancy orchestrations and, you know, were recorded under really optimal circumstances.
Yeah, in studios, pristine, kind of, right.
Yeah, I would love to be able to kind of compare and contrast those with, you know, recordings that were made during the actual period in which that was happening.
You know, one of the challenges in Jewish music always was you'd have some great piece. I once did a musical section for what was then the brand new Skirball Museum. They asked me, I was a rabbinical student, and they said, would you put together the music that'll play during, you know, in when people go through the display? So I put together a whole bunch of stuff on Jewish music, which I did on cassette tapes in that day. Not maybe the optimal recording format even then. And the hard part was finding recordings that weren't so scratchy, hard to listen to, where the production was so difficult. Nowadays, the mastering techniques are so good, you really could pull up some of that stuff, clean it, and compare it to these kind of pristine recordings that the Milken Archive did.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of interest in those old recordings. I think they're willing to tolerate the lack of sound quality in some cases just because there's an interest in that period in history.
Yeah.
You know, when we've done surveys to ask people what they're interested in, they are equally interested in the historical recordings as they are in the newly made recordings.
Hearing Dave Terrace play clarinet, even if it isn't a very good clarinet, a very good recording is something unique.
Yeah, you don't need to do a whole lot or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, to make it interesting.
I want to thank our guest today for a great visit here on Too Jewish. The Milken Archive is milkenarchive.org. It's an incredible website. And I want to thank Jeff Genesco for a great visit here. Thanks so much, Jeff. Anything else that people can do to find out more or participate?
Well, you mentioned the website. We also are pretty active on Facebook and Twitter. We're easy to find there by just simply searching for Milken Archive. I mentioned earlier we're also on Spotify, YouTube, iTunes, all of those places. So we're out there, and we're interested to have people access our material in, you know, whatever way makes sense for them. Also happy to have people visit the website, drop us a line, let us know how we're doing, and I'd like to say thanks to you for having me on and for help spreading the word about our work.
It's a pleasure. It's a fantastic resource. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out from the Milken Archive.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Alice Langholt, author of the new book about Adam and Eve called First Family, a novel. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Our play out this morning comes from the Milken Archive for Jewish Music's extraordinary collection of Yiddish theater music. It's Molly Pekan's delightful tune, A Be Gesund, Be Well. My friends, you should be well, and have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
A bisschen Sinn, a bisschen Regen, ruhig auf dem Kopf zu legen, wie gesinnt können glücklich sein. A shich, a zug, a clean, a rose, Schöne an drei Irrslots, wie wir sind, können wir glücklich sein.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.